Parshat Va'era, Tavshin Samach Zayin. For whose benefit were the plagues of Egypt performed by Hashem? Originally, in Parshat Shemot, God tells Moshe that the plagues will be needed in order to influence Paro to let the Jews leave Egypt. In Shemot, chapter 3, verses 19 to 20, we read, V'ani yodati ki lo yiten etchem melech Mitzrayim la'aloch. I know that the king of Egypt is not going to permit you to go, v'lo biyad chazakah, and not even if a strong hand is brought to bear upon him. V'shalachti et yadi, and I will send forth my hand, v'keti et Mitzrayim b'chol niflotai asher asebi kerbo, and I will plague Egypt with all of my wonders that I will place in its midst, v'achrichen yishlach etchem, and afterwards he will send you. Parshat Va'era widens the field and states that the plagues were meant to demonstrate to the entire Egyptian people God's power and mastery over the universe. In Shemot, chapter 7, verse 5, V'hidu Mitzrayim, and Egypt will know, Ki ani Hashem b'natati et yadi al Mitzrayim, that I am God when I extended my hand over Egypt, Hotzeti et b'nei Yisrael mitocham, and I extracted b'nei Yisrael from their midst. Ibn Ezra even suggests that at least some of the plagues were meant to disrupt Jewish life, implying that while Moshe might not have been correct to indict the entire Jewish people when he said, V'heim lo yaminu li, they will not believe me, nevertheless, there were at least some Jewish disbelievers who needed the same type of convincing about God's omnipotence and involvement in human history that the Egyptians did. In Shemot chapter 7, verse 19, the Torah writes, V'yomer Hashem el Moshe, and Hashem said to Moshe, Emor el Aharon, say to Aaron, Kach matcha, take your staff, and te yatchal mimei Mitzrayim, extend your hand over the waters of Egypt, al narotam, al yiroihem, v'alag mehem, over their rivers, their springs, their swamps, v'al kol mikveh mimehem, any gathering of their waters, v'yudam, and the water will turn to blood, v'yadam b'chol eretz Mitzrayim u'beitzim b'avanim, and there was blood throughout the land of Egypt, in wooden receptacles for the water and stone receptacles for the water. Ibn Ezra begins his comments with a critique of a well-known Midrashic position regarding the first plague, the plague of Egyptian waters turning to blood. Perek Zayin, chapter 7, verse 24, Vayachberu, when it says how in order to try to find fresh water, everyone dug, Rabim Omrim, many say, Ibn Ezra says, Ki amayim hayubiyad ha-mitzri adomim kadam, when an Egyptian would touch the water, it would be as red as blood, Minit lavnu biyad ha-yisraeli, and that very same water, if it were in the hands of a Jew, would be pure and normal. Im kein, lama lo nichtav otze b'Torah? But the Ibn Ezra skeptically says, if this was so, why shouldn't such a major part of this miracle not have been recorded in the Torah? Well, lefi dati, therefore the Ibn Ezra takes a different view. Ki makat hadam v'tzvardim v'kinim hayta kolelet ha-mitzrim v'ha-ivrim. According to my opinion, the plagues of blood, frogs, and lice not only included the Egyptians, but even the Jews. Because the Torah does not make any distinctions in these in the verses describing these plagues between the land of Egypt and Goshen, between the Jews and the Egyptians. Ki achar ha-katuv nirdof, we should follow what the text says. Ve'ela ha-shlosh ma'at hezeko. Furthermore, these three, dam, tzvardeya, and kinim, the damage that they cause is relatively slight. Rak makat ha-arov shayta kasha. On the other hand, the plague of wild animals, that certainly was severe, Hashem hifrish ben ha-mitzrim ben Yisrael. There certainly God drew a distinction between the Jews and the Egyptians. V'kacha makat ha-dever, the same with the plague, v'abarad ba'avur miknehem, as well as the hail because of the death of their herds. Lo kein b'shchin, but this is not the case with boils, v'lo barben nor locusts, ki heim yotzim mitzrayim, because the locusts will eventually leave. Consequently, Ibn Ezra concludes that just as the Egyptians were digging for water, the Jews were as well. But even the first reference in Parshat Shemot to the plagues influencing Paro to let the Jews leave is augmented by Netziv's interpretation of a verse in this week's Parsha, Parshat Va'era. During the negotiations between Moshe and Paro regarding the removal of the plague of the frogs, the second of the 10 plagues, Moshe asks when Paro would want the frogs to disappear. In Shemot chapter 8, verse 6, very counterintuitively, Vayomer l'machar, Paro says, I'd like them to leave tomorrow. Vayomer kedvarecha, Moshe says, okay, as you said, l'man teda ki ein kashem elokeinu, in order that you, Paro, will know that there is no one like our God. Ibn Ezra and Ramban debate the virtues of an interpretation of Rav Shmuel bar Chafni that parallels a famous scene in Mark Twain's A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. In Twain's novel, a person who was about to be burned at the stake, because he was in the possession of an eternal calendar of solar eclipses, was able to say that the people should release him because otherwise he would take away the sun. He happened to know that in the next few minutes there was going to be a solar eclipse. He was going to use it to his advantage. And sure enough, when there was a solar eclipse, not only was he released, but he was given great honor as a magician, as a person who really understood the stars and the planets. Well, similarly, Shmuel Bar Chafni says that Paro viewed Moshe as such. Ein min hag ha'adam levakesh rak she'asur ha'makeh mimenu miyad. The normal thing to have done was to ask for the plague to be removed immediately, that the frog should go away half an hour ago. V'chashav Paro ki ma'arechet kochvei ha'shamayim hivyat tzvardim al Mitzrayim. Paro thought that the reason why the frogs came in the first place was because of astrological influence. Moshehu yodeze. Moshe was an astrologer and happened to know when the various cycles, when the frogs come and when the frogs go. Chashav Paro, Paro further thought, ki ata higia eight tzur tzvardim. How come Moshe is first showing up now in the palace after a week of these frogs? Apparently the time has come when the frogs are going to disappear anyway. Al kein nisahu la'arich v'yamar l'machar. And that's why Paro tested Moshe and told him what he thought Moshe did not expect. Moshe was expecting for Paro to say right now, and he says, tell you what, tomorrow, to see if in fact Moshe could meet that request. The Ramban, on the other hand, quotes Rosh Shmuel Bar Chafni and gives his own interpretation. V'nachon b'inai, what I think is right, ki ba'avur shamar l'matay atir lach. Since Moshe said to Paro, when should I pray for you? When should I pray that the frogs go away? Implying you have to give me a very specific time, a very specific moment. So, under those circumstances, chasha paro ki bikesh zman. What Paro thought was that Moshe was asking for a little time, or maybe a lot of time. V'alkein natan lo zman katzar. In Paro's eyes, saying that this should happen tomorrow is a short time. Instead of seeing this as a lengthening of the time, and therefore it doesn't fit into Moshe's expectations due to his astrological readings, according to Ramban, he was asking for a particularly short amount of time, thinking that Moshe would not be able to meet the conditions. At any rate, Vayomer Lamachar, so Paro says, tomorrow, Moshe analo kidvarecha kenyeh, as you've said, so will it be. Ki achrei shelo bikashta shasur mimad lo yasur ad lamachar. Because you didn't ask for them to go away right away, that's why they won't go away until tomorrow. But this brings us to the Nitziv's take on Paro's request that the frogs go away tomorrow. Teda, you should know, the Nitziv writes, She'ein ma'aseh Hashem Elokeinu k'mo kol ha'kochot, that the acts of the Lord our God is intrinsically different from all of the other forces. She'ein yicholim l'chaven ha'sha'a b'tzimtzum kukach. Other forces are incapable of being as precise and exact in terms of carrying out their various activities. Basher tluyim bedat elyon mehem yamar lamante, and because in fact those powers are dependent in turn on God Himself, and God is the one who determines whether a power can meet its obligations in an exact and forthcoming a quick time. So from that point of view, this was something personal to Paro, and the Ramban continues. Why does it say Laman Teda? In order that you, second person singular, you will know. Kilona daza elulaparo levado. Because this particular miracle, the idea that the Tzvardim would first go away exactly at the time when Paro set for them to go away, this was something only known to Paro. Perhaps if the rest of the country had known that he was stalling or delaying, they wouldn't have been terribly happy. So this was kept on the quiet. This was something between Moshe and Paro. Later on, in chapter 14, verse 4, when we're discussing the splitting of the sea and the drowning of the Egyptian forces, there the language is, V'chizakti et lev paro, and I will harden Paro's heart for adav achrihem, and he will pursue after them, the Jews. V'kavda b'faro b'chol chilo, and I will be glorified. God will be glorified through Paro and all of his army. All of Egypt will know that I am God, as opposed to in this verse, it is Paro who it is meant to learn this lesson. Now, the idea that God can carry out his plans in exacting fashion is something that is already alluded to by Chazal in an early Rashi in Breishit. In Breishit, chapter 2, verse 2, where the Torah says, "Vayichal kim ba'yom ha'shvi'i melachto asher asa," and Hashem finished on the seventh day the melacha that he did, "Vayishbot ba'yom ha'shvi'i mikol melachto asher asa," and he rested on the seventh day from all of the work that he did. The question, obviously, is this seems to be an oxymoron. Either you're working on the seventh day or you are resting on the seventh day. How can you do both? So in one of Rashi's explanations, he writes, Reb Shimon Omer, Shimon says, "Basav adam sheni yodea itav rega'av." When it comes to human beings who are imprecise with regard to time, "Sarich losif michol al kodesh." That's why you have to start Shabbat early, because you can't be sure that you're going to get it precisely when the sixth day ends and the seventh day begins. Kodesh Baruch Hu, however, God, Sheyodea Itav Rega'av, who is terribly familiar with the times, the whole idea of measuring time, Nichnas Bo Kuchut Asara, so therefore he's able to finish exactly at the end of the sixth and go into Shabbat at exactly the beginning of the seventh. Nireh Ke'ilu Kala Bo Bayom. It looked like he finished on the seventh, but he really didn't. He finished at the exact last moment of the sixth. This idea about God's exactness when it comes to time appears again with respect to a later aspect of the ten plagues regarding the last one, Makat Bechorot. When Moshe originally informs the people that Makat Bechorot was going to take place, in chapter 11, verse 4 of Shemot, it says, "Vayomer Moshe ko amar Hashem," this is what God says, "Kichatzot alayla," with a chaf, about approximately midnight, "Ani otzei betoch Mitzrayim," God will go out in the midst of Egypt in order to plague the firstborn. But when the Torah actually describes what happened, in Shemot, Perek Yud Bet, Pasuk Chav Tet, 12:29, "Vayhi bichatzi halayla," not kichatzi halayla, but bichatzi halayla, and it was exactly at midnight, "Vashem hikah kol b'chorat be'eretz Mitzrayim," that God smote all of the firstborn in the land of Egypt. The rabbis are quoted by Rashi as understanding the difference in terminology as an indication that God has a much more refined sense of time than man does. Rashi writes, "Rabbeinu darshu," the rabbis interpreted, "kamo b'chatzi alayla." I mean, it means the same time, in a loose fashion, v'amru, but they said, "Sha'amar Moshe kichatzot." Why was Moshe insistent on saying just kichatzot, approximately midnight? "Demashma samuchlo olufanav lachra." Because that gives you a certain amount of wiggle room. It implies, well, maybe it's not exactly midnight, maybe it's a couple minutes before, a couple minutes later. "V'lomar b'chatzot," didn't say exactly midnight, "shema yitu et stagnine paro," lest the astrologers paro error, "vayomru Moshe badayu," and they'll say, Moshe was a liar, Moshe didn't make good on his promise. But why, according to the Nitziv, does Hashem, via Moshe, want to make paro personally aware of how God is precise when it comes to time? What does this add to the various things that we know Hashem is capable of doing? An old English folk saying claims timeliness is godliness. When we are early or late, it is essentially a function of either outside forces coming to bear upon us and upsetting the schedule that we ideally wish to follow, or our insensitivity or indifference to the importance of beginning and ending our various activities on time. When we are the only ones involved, it could be claimed that this is a victimless crime, although wasting time, or more colloquially, killing time, in light of what we could have done with those extra minutes or hours, could be construed as a crime against ourselves. However, in the event that others are forced to put up with us before an appointed time, or are made to wait inordinately until we finally show up, we are certainly acting in an ungodly manner. In other words, Hashem is neither subject to outside forces, nor hurtful to himself or others, and to the extent possible, certainly national leaders, but even individuals in positions of ostensibly less global importance, should be concerned to be godly in as many ways as we can, including striving to include timeliness among our literally holy personal characteristics. Shabbat Shalom and Chodesh Tov.